journal and end it with, where does my hope lie?
Waking up knowing that I'm on God's team. No matter if I make a mistake today, just keep moving forward.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. We're in LifeWord Studios today, broadcasting in over 160 languages to 127 countries with a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, we have very special guests with us all the way from Romania. Pam and Brian Reisner, thank you all for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
It is good to be here.
Yeah, so Romania, tell me, if I were going to visit Romania, what is the one thing that I need to know for sure? Mm.
Come with an empty stomach and be prepared to eat and eat well.
Absolutely. Romania, they are very, they love to host you and they love to feed you. Mm. And so, and you were talking about 3 to 4 course meals.
Oh,
and wow. So it's good country food.
Now, country as in Arkansas country, or, I mean, what are
country
we talking
as
here?
In, well, not Arkansas. They don't have great, you know, we don't do biscuits and gravy there in Romania. But we have lots of pork, a lot of chicken, a lot of potatoes, vegetables.
Yeah, pork is the vegetable of Romania.
Okay.
So yeah. Pork and potatoes.
Wow.
All the way.
Yeah. So how long have y'all been in Romania now?
It's been over 6.5 years now. We're approaching 7-year mark.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about the calling, how you decided Romania, how you decided that missions work was where you were supposed to be.
Well, my background is in law enforcement, and my wife was in banking. And was student pastor. I've always been bivocational. And so doing this was something that we always enjoyed. And I went on a mission trip in 2015 with one of my students and just fell in love with the country. And my wife came with me the next year as my assistant.
Me.
Yeah.
He told me I was just going as a co-leader, but he had been praying for us and hoped that God would work on my heart, too. So he tricked me.
Yeah. So she came in 2017, and I'll tell you, God started working on her heart as well, and just the doors was opening. Mm-hmm.
So, Pam, what was it like now going from banking, being the wife of a law enforcement officer, a youth leader, to now looking at the prospect of not just moving to Romania with your husband in ministry, but with children as well?
Yeah, it's scary. You feel such a responsibility for your kids. In living in America and being American, you have a false sense of security. You feel like you're in control. We learned quickly once we moved that you're really not in control of your own life, regardless of what country you live in. But when you leave your home country, you sense that loss of control even more. And there's a certain hesitancy and fear of, what if my kids are mentally scarred from this? What if they hate us? What if they grow up and they hate church and they don't want to serve the Lord because they had a really hard transition, or they absolutely hate the mission field? So yeah, there's a lot of responsibility and concern for how it will impact your kids.
Yeah. I was in preparation for a sermon a couple of weeks ago. I was reading about some of the missionaries in the early 1900s, 1910, 1920, not necessarily Baptist, more Methodist and Presbyterian, they were required to leave their children in the States at a boarding school. I couldn't imagine doing that, but that's definitely something you would have to be called to do. How would you feel if that was still the calling today?
I can't imagine. I can't imagine having to leave my kids behind. When we moved, we at least had each other. So I can't imagine not having, even as hard as it was, I can't imagine not having them with us on the field. One of the really hard things that I felt for my kids was having to them to leave their friends, to leave, even though they were in seventh grade, that was their center. That was their world, was school and their friends. And so it was really hard, but I can't imagine not having them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as that transition takes place, I'm sure there was quite a culture shock, not just for you, but your children as well.
Yeah.
What was the major problem there, the major crisis to try to get through?
Originally, the major problem was no friends. Mm. They literally, we moved to a country. Well, we moved from our home county where we knew everyone. We knew the postman. We knew the mayor. I had worked at the bank in our community for almost 16 years. Brian had been a police officer for 14 years. We knew everyone. Everyone knew us. Our kids knew everyone. And we moved to a country where we knew two people in the whole country. Yeah. And so them not having any friends, not having family, so not knowing anyone was really, that was the first thing that they really struggled with. Mm-hmm. Also, we were busy like most Americans. We later learned that it's not necessarily a blessing, but a curse. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes we pride on ourselves in America on how busy we are. Mm-hmm. And so we went from a really fast way of living to very different, very slow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very open about it. I see a therapist once a week. And this last week when I saw my therapist, he said, you know, Brian, Jesus took time to rest. He literally sent people away to take a nap. And he said, you might need to consider in ministry resting for a while. I said, well, there's just one problem with that. I'm not Jesus. Yeah. You know, I can't do all that. I can't be as productive as he was. Yeah. But it's important for us to rest. So even in that transition, though, I could imagine there being some anxiety about not being busy, like feeling like you were supposed to be doing something.
Yeah. And we went from not just busy with our everyday lives, but we worked full time up until 30 days before we left. Mm-hmm. So not only was Brian a full time officer and part time youth pastor, if that's such a thing, I don't think it is, but part time youth pastor, and I was working full time at the bank. The kids were doing all of their school activities. We were also full-time deputation. Mm. So we were even busier than normal whenever we made the transition to the field. When we made that transition, we went with a VSM team. So we were super busy for a couple of weeks. And then suddenly, everyone was gone. Mm. And it was quiet. And we didn't know anyone. And it was hard. What do you fill your time with? What do you fill your days with? How do you prepare for what's coming when you don't know what's coming? It was hard and just so quiet, mm-hmm. just so quiet.
Yeah. So I imagine, Brian, you being in law enforcement and then going there, what was it, which, you know, I being former law enforcement, we look at things differently.
Yes.
What about the security there that you felt as far as what your family needed by way of protection?
You know, that was really hard for me at first. I actually felt a little naked in a way with not having a firearm with me, not having any protection. And so I was really worried for a little while there, and would just, you know, constantly make sure the gates was locked, the doors was locked. And it took a little while to learn that the area was safe. And but at first I was on high alert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, in protection there, when we kind of fast forward this just a little bit, we have the Russia-Ukraine conflict going on now. And, at that point in time, you were very close to where all of that was taking place. So what kind of stress did that not even just put on you as a family, but as a ministry?
That was a very tough time when Russia invaded Ukraine. You know, it was a scary time for us and a sad time. We was very sad for Ukraine because we have friends there. We've been there multiple times with Larry and Tammy Wood. And so we loved the people there, and it was very sad, but it was also very, just a fear, some fear crept in there about how far Russia was going to go. Mm-hmm. Was they going to take over the whole country of Ukraine? Was they going to cross into Romania? Was it going to be nuclear attack going there? And so I was very worried, and I've told several people this, but, you know, our line of the, for a long time, my job was to go into the heart of danger, going to, you know, calls that I didn't know if I was going to make it out of. But none of them times that I drove into those calls was my family in the back seat. Mm-hmm. And now my family is with me in a country that could potentially be harmed. You know, we could get harmed. And that changed a lot of things. But we was determined, and we prayed a lot and made a decision to stay after talking to the missions office and figuring some things out. And we started working with the Ukrainian refugees.
Yeah. So, Pam, as a wife and as a mother, what was that conversation like of do we stay, do we go, what do we do?
Yeah, it was really hard. It's really, really hard. We talked a lot about, well, if it's just the two of us, this would be easy. Or if it was just Brian, this would be easy. But with our kids, there's not just their physical well-being, but there's their mental well-being. And there was a night after the war had started, it was just a few days in, and a snowplow came down our street, and they're big there. And so the lights, it lit up Landon's bedroom, and he was in his room. And he thought it was a military tank coming down the street, and it scared him to death. And he rushed to the window to see what was going on. And that's when I realized, man, like our kids, they're on edge too. They're really, really nervous. And so again, it goes back to that whole where I started in the beginning is, okay, how much of this is going to impact them in a negative way for the rest of their lives? We also meet with a counselor regularly, and I met with her also while Brian was meeting with pastors and praying and talking and meeting with our BMA family, and we were all just praying. And our counselor told me, you know, if you decide to stay, this is one of those things where your kids get to see you live out faith, not just talk about faith. And that was one of those things. It's like, okay. This is where they get to see faith lived out.
Yeah. And you know, it's easy to quote the scripture that we walk by faith and not by sight, mm-hmm. but it's really hard to put it into practice.
It is.
Yeah. Absolutely. So how did ministry change after that conflict began? Do we still call it a conflict? Is it a war? I'm not even sure what an invasion.
I think if you asked any of our Ukrainian friends, they'd definitely tell you it's war.
Yes. Yeah, it changed a lot of things. There in Brasov, where we was living at the time, we was planning or helping plant our second church plant there with Christian Martinez and his wife Vanessa and Sarah. And so we were continuing to do a church plant, but it also we did a lot of refugee work. We did a lot of outreach in that area. On top of that, Pam and I started working at a camp, a refugee camp. So we started just really being heavily involved with refugees at the time and just loving on them and helping them the best that we could. We... In some ways, ministry was normal, but it was now mixed with refugees and with working this way, with a little bit of sense of fear in a way of not knowing exactly how things was going to go. We had to develop a go bag. We had to have some things like water, toiletries, some cover, some stash of money, because we didn't know at any time we was going to have to leave it all and flee to the south and go towards, you know, Greece or something to get away if we had to. So we had to act like things was normal, but yet things wasn't normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'll ask you this, Pam, from a mother's point of view, I assume most of these refugees were women and children.
They were.
Who have left their husbands, their sons in Ukraine. What was that like to minister to them in such devastation?
Yeah. It's extremely hard, and I often found myself wishing, like, I wish I had words. I wish I could do something. I wish I could fix it. Obviously, there's none of that's even possible. Some of the first things that we did was just provide for their immediate physical needs. That includes hygiene care and things like this that most of them came by foot and spent several nights maybe sleeping in train stations or at the border to get across. So they came across with minimum supplies. Mm-hmm. So we took care of some physical needs first, but that only takes a few days. Mm-hmm. And then you're left with what to do now. We discovered them actually preparing food for us. Mm-hmm. It gave them purpose.
Yeah.
It gave them, hey, we're still useful. We can do this. They didn't want us to cook and clean for them. And honestly, they didn't want Romanian food. They wanted Ukrainian food. Mm-hmm. So we got really comfortable with them cooking. We'd go and they would cook us food and treats that they enjoyed. And they served us. It helped them. Also, just being a good listener, being an active listener, hearing some really hard stories, being available and listening. We sat on wooden picnic tables for hours at a time and just listened, and were there for them as they cried and as they shared their stories and shared their hearts. One of the things that we had was only a few, I'm talking like two or three, were Christians. And so we had the opportunity to be the light and love of Jesus to a lot of people who didn't know Jesus.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, the fear there, at least, which, you know, I wasn't there, so I can't imagine what's happening. But my immediate first thought of fear would be, what if Russia does take over the Ukraine? Do they come look for the refugees?
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
What was the thought process even about that?
You know, I actually wondered about that and about how far they would come and if they would go after the refugees. And that was part of our fear. We lived about 2.5 hours from the border and from where some of the fighting was. Mm-hmm. And so we was very worried, and especially some of the nuclear or the power plants that they was attacking and some of the things there. We was very concerned with even if there was a radiation outbreak of some sort, would it make it across the border and into our area?
Yeah. So we fast forward a little bit. You've got three children, all the same age,
yes.
which is hard in itself. And then all of a sudden, they come back to the States to go to college, all three of them at the same time, and boom, you're empty nesters. How does that change the dynamic of everything?
It's quiet. It's very, very quiet. Good thing is, Brian and I love each other, and we were friends long before we were parents. Mm-hmm. So we do enjoy the extra time together, but we miss our kids. We miss our kids. When we moved on the field, that was my job, was being mama. Mm-hmm. And homeschooling them, they went from public school to homeschooling. So I didn't have to worry about what to do every day. It was very clear what my job was. Mm-hmm. And that was to care for my kids, to lead them closer to Christ in every way that I could, and to make sure they had a good education so that they could launch into their futures best that they could. So it's quiet, and it's hard. It's hard to see them go back to the States, and they don't have the friends that they had before they went to America. They don't know where to shop here in the States. They don't know how to use the drive-thru banking. They don't know what the pound key is whenever they tried to activate their debit card. That's known as the hashtag key to my kids.
Right.
So, yeah, there's just so much. Making doctor's appointments, they don't know how. It was hard. There was just everything was just so hard.
And of course, you are, what was it, 6 or 7, 8 hours ahead?
Yeah, yes. 8 hours.
Yeah.
8 hours.
So you had to make sure you were awake. I mean, I can imagine as a father having a son during the day that I need to be available if something were to happen. But sometimes it would be in the middle of the night for you.
Yes.
And what was it like even worrying that you might be asleep and miss a call for help?
Yeah, that was a very big concern for us. Matter of fact, we stayed up late almost every night, up to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's when the kids was needing to call us and talk to us. And so we was being available late, and which meant, you know, we had long days. And so, but it was, it was, it was important for us to be there. And several nights that we probably didn't sleep at all because of different situations that was happening, or some, they had some crisis that they was dealing with, and it was a very big struggle.
Yeah.
So you're here in the United States on furlough until, I guess it was March, yes, kind of something there. So what are your plans while you're here? What are you looking forward to doing just being here?
Spending every moment with our kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they up for that though?
They are right now because mom has done their laundry and mom and dad are cooking and No, we obviously won't spend every moment with our kids, but no, soak in as much time as possible. Take care of some health stuff that we can help them with while they're here. Just really enjoy and have fun. One of the first things that we did was make the missions house feel a little bit more like home. And we brought our Christmas ornaments from Romania that we had taken from Arkansas to Romania. We brought those back to Arkansas. So we've decorated our Christmas tree with our personal ornaments. And we brought our stockings that our friend in Romania made for us. So those are at the missions house. So, yeah, we've tried to just make our time together feel like home.
Yeah. So kind of shifting gears here to the mental health aspect, what would you say to somebody who feels like they're called to missions, but there is that hesitancy simply due to the anxiety, or maybe they have children and they just don't, I mean, of course they want to submit to the call, but the worry is overwhelming. So what would your advice be to them?
Do it. Do it anyway. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. Brian always says, like, we were told culture shock would come and it would be hard. So we knew that going in, but it was even harder than we thought it would be. Wouldn't change it. Wouldn't change it at all. But you do it. You do it scared. You do it afraid, and you do it together. Mm-hmm.
Surround yourself with a good team, a good support group. Have a counselor that you're connected with before you go on the field that you're working with, and then the whole time during that you're on time that you're on the field. It's very important for that, and to be open and honest that you're struggling. It's okay. You know, at first we was afraid to share how we felt, because to be honest, we thought we'll get pulled off the field. You know, we didn't know. And so we kept a lot of it in, and we should have just been honest and open, and been available to receive help when we needed it. But yes, absolutely. Having a counselor and having a support team is also vital.
Yeah. Have good roots. Have your roots deep. If you don't have a good, solid, quiet time when you leave for the field, you sure won't have it when you get on the field. If your family is struggling before you go on the field, oh, it'll be 10 times worse on the field. Any stress, any anxiety, any struggles, those are just amplified on the field. So do your very best, work hard to get your family to a healthy mental state before you go, but don't let anxiety stand in the way of serving the Lord.
Yeah. Now, I do know we've had some missionaries that have gotten to the field and had many different mental health issues of where they've had to come off the field just because for their health.
Sure, absolutely.
And there's a book called The Imperfect Pastor by Zach Aswin, and his best friend was a pastor and committed suicide while he was in the pastorate. And one of the things that it points out in that book is that God called you to this specific task, but if you're not healthy, you can't do this specific task. Mm. So how important is it that you think that your mental health is well taken care of, even in lieu of your ministry?
I think it's very important.
Yeah, it is. Your mental health is, it's what drives you. It's what keeps you, it's what gets you out of bed or keeps you in bed.
That's right.
When we met with our counselor, one of the things that we learned was, okay, this is very important that you have some kind of physical activity today. It is very important that you get out of bed today, that you go to bed at a regular time, you get up at a regular time, whether you want to or not. It's very important that you journal, that you empty all of that that's in your head out, and you don't leave it up there to just swirl. I know for us, at times, we struggled with telling each other when we were struggling, because I'm struggling today, but Brian seems to have it together today. If I tell him how much I'm struggling, I might bring him down, and I don't want to bring him down. So I keep it to myself. And then Brian feels like, wow, I'm struggling, but Pam seems to have it together, when really you're both struggling and you're just afraid to tell each other how much you're struggling. Or maybe you don't let your kids know because you feel like you should be strong, when really your kids are struggling too. But they think, oh, mom and dad aren't struggling, so we shouldn't struggle. We shouldn't struggle either. So communicate with each other, I think, is also really important, and give each other permission to have hard days.
Yeah. I think that it's very important that you're in a good place before you go, because it is almost, it's extremely hard. Culture shock's going to hit you. Culture shock will hit you. It's a matter of when, And so if you're going on the field in a spot where you shouldn't, you don't need to be, and when the culture shock hits you, it's going to be overwhelming. There's going to be times that it's like a roller coaster. We've been through ups and we've been through downs. But anytime that we stayed down for a period of time, that's when we got concerned and we said, okay, we're going to have to do some self-care and figure some things out and get back into a healthier spot. Being in a healthier spot is what's going to keep you on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, the things you mentioned, Pam, those are good for people whether they're on the mission field or not. And some days the big goal is to just get out of bed.
Just get out of bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned that most people don't like to do is journal.
No, they hate it.
and, I tell people all the time, hey, you need to write that down. It's an irrational thought. Well, write it down, because when you have a clear day, you're going to be able to go back and see that it was irrational, and then write down after it why it's irrational. So when it comes up again, you can go back to, I don't want to call it a sane moment, but maybe a clear moment that you saw these things. And, having something to look forward to, all of these things are typical of any mental health issue. And so, but I would magnify all that by 1,000 when you're 5,000 miles away from home.
Yeah.
And it's not just a jump in the car and go see somebody that you know kind of ordeal.
No, it's true.
And a lot of times I would assume it's not a just pick up the phone kind of deal and be able to call somebody in the moment and get the help that you need. So I've heard a lot of missionaries and even pastors feel like they're isolated in the area of ministry. Not necessarily because they don't have anybody, but maybe it's that they don't have people that they know they can trust. So as not just as missionaries, but as ministers, how do you build that circle of trust?
Very slowly and very carefully. Our counselor always reminds me that relationships are like walking into the ocean. It's perfectly acceptable to do it step by step. Mm-hmm. And not all relationships are created equal. Mm-hmm. We are in the line of work where we carry a lot. We know a lot. We carry a lot. And you can't just share that with anyone and everyone. And so you take every relationship step by step. And you don't look necessarily for a whole team. You're looking for a couple of people that you truly can trust and help hold you up.
Yeah. Well, even when you look at Jesus, he had three close that he could dump on. Mm-hmm. And I would say, again, I'm not Jesus, but if I have one that I know that I can dump on that would take it to the grave, that's what I need.
Yeah.
It's true.
How do you do that though? How do you find that one?
It's very hard. It's hard for me. It's hard for me. I don't trust a lot of people at all, and I think it's because of past, the job and being burned a lot and seeing the bad in people, and so it's really hard to know. But I think that you have to trust a little bit, and if it doesn't work out, then go to something else. But I think that you're going to have, you know, finding that one person that you feel like you can trust and then just trust. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I look at friendships in three baskets. And I think that when you put your friendships in one of three baskets, it eliminates expectations, and that's mm-hmm. kind of helps you. But your first basket is those that you're a missionary to, that mm-hmm. that they need you to pour into them. And then you have your friends that are equal, that you need them sometimes, they need you sometimes, and it's a back and forth. But then you have those people that you don't need each other, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the kind of friends that you need, is the ones that I love you, but I don't need you to give me anything, mm-hmm. and you don't need me to give you anything. And so we can be perfectly happy and content. Yeah. And now there are moments that we might need to lean on each other, but it's not an everyday constant exactly. kind of struggle of leaning. So, it was helpful to me to put my friends in baskets, because then I'm like, well, I know that they need from me. And so when they're coming to me needing from me, that's the expectation.
Exactly.
You know, but I also know I can't go to them because they need me. I can't pull from them. And so when you look at your team of people, you really have to begin to look and see, okay, who is taking from me, who is giving to me, and who doesn't need me? And then when you figure that out, then you can build your circle around that.
I love that. That's very cool. That's very good.
Yeah. So just putting a nice, big, pretty bow on all of this, I'll start with you, Pam. If there was one thing that you could say to the world in relevance to mental health and ministry, missionary field, what would it be?
Journal and end it with, where does my hope lie? Empty it out of your head, and then end it with, where does my hope lie? Where is truth, and where does true hope come from?
Yeah, that's great. Same question. Yeah.
I think I agree with what Pam said 100%, and I struggle with journaling. That's very hard for me, but it's so important. I think also just knowing that we're that small tool in God's big plan, that, you know, we're playing that small part, and that just, I think that just waking up knowing that I'm on God's team, and no matter if I make a mistake today, if I mess up, just keep moving forward, mm-hmm. And it's okay to have down days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know why it's so hard for you to journal? Because we're taught if you wrote it down, it actually did happen.
Because
if you didn't write it down, it didn't happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So, I just thought about that.
And that's why journaling's so good, is because you are emptying it out. You know, that's why talk therapy works. You're talking it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've said before, and I don't say this to downplay any mental health condition, but whenever you go to talk therapy and you start saying it, it doesn't sound as crazy coming out of your mouth as it did in your head.
So true.
And when you can reframe that as to something that is helpful, and realize how, you know, that this doesn't make any sense that I would think that way, because that would never happen, then you can get through just about anything. Amen. Brian, Pam, appreciate y'all being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
it's been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Brian. You can find me at the.brian.com. Again, follow all of our Christian media content at lifeword.org. Thank you so much for being here today with us, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.